19th. Jan, can you take a roll call vote?
Jason Hartman?
Here.
David Lindley? Ashley?
David is absent this evening. Do we need a motion to excuse him?
I'll make the motion.
Oh, you got it.
Okay, Ashley made the motion. Jason seconded. Jan, do you want to take the vote for David Lindley's absence?
Jason Hartman?
Aye.
Ashley Post?
Aye.
Jim Rensier?
Aye.
Joe Turkowitz?
Aye.
Motion carries. Ashley Post?
Here.
Jim Rensier?
Here.
Joe Turkowitz?
Present.
We have a quorum.
Okay, next will be public comment. Jan will read any messages received before the 5 p.m. deadline today for tonight's meeting.
So we have 6 public comments. One of them is lengthy. I'll start with that one. This is an email from James L. Cassina, attorney at law. Dear Mayor, City Administrator, and Clerk Treasurer, I represent a number of homeowners and property owners on Strawberry Mountain. We're greatly concerned about and opposed to the proposal by the City of White Salmon to lease land Oregon RSA number 2 US Cellular for installing a cell tower in the middle of our neighborhood. In addition, my wife and I are homeowners on Strawberry Mountain, approximately 300 feet from the proposed location of the cell tower. Some homeowners' properties or home locations are within 100 feet of the site. Naturally, we owners are concerned about the negative visual, health, and property value effects of installing a cell tower in our residential neighborhood. Equally important and more to the point of this letter, there are reasons why construction of a cell tower by US Cellular and leasing of the tower site by the city to US Cellular are legally impermissible. One, the city property in question, the site, is governed by covenants, conditions, and restrictions that were created for our benefit and protection. These CCRs do not allow structures that are non-residential, nor structures that have not been approved by the Architectural Control Committee of we property owners. Copies of these are attached for reference. You should note also that although the reservoir locations on the city property, which were generously donated to the city by Marvin and Shirley Merritt, there was never any grant or approval by anyone for construction of cell towers or any other commercial structures, particularly by a private business concern. You should also note that although the city property where the reservoirs were permitted was part of Merritt Short Plat 9503 and therefore also subject to the CCNRs I have attached to this letter, the site for the cell tower was actually part of Lot A1 of Short Plat 9503 until November 2017, when a boundary line adjustment was done to transfer it to city ownership. The important point of this is that the CCNRs governing our neighborhood, particularly applied to the cell tower site, the CCNRs run with the land and therefore still govern the cell tower site, and no cell tower can be constructed on that site without the approval of our Architectural Control Committee. And two, the site is zoned for R1 residential use only. I consulted the city's zoning map this morning and confirmed that the city property in question is still zoned R1. Three, the proposed ground lease would be an illegal subdivision of the city property. If I'm pausing, I'm admitting people into the meeting. The proposed ground lease would be an illegal subdivision of the city property. Although apparently no subdivision has been applied for yet, the ground lease states on page 1 that the subject of the lease is to lease a parcel, and throughout the ground lease, the term leasehold parcel is used to refer to the land being leased. The ground lease would grant the tenant a right of first refusal to purchase the parcel. In its full context, the ground lease contemplates the property being a separate parcel, but is undersized for what is required in the subdivision in which we reside. I also note that the ground lease would require the city to indemnify the tenant for many losses due to risks such as loss by the tenant of quiet enjoyment of its parcel for the uses it contemplates. Four, although I am not yet aware of the height of the proposed cell tower, it would undoubtedly be higher than the height limit of structures permitted in this residential zone. It would exceed the code permitted height of all of our structures and result in a commercial eyesore in this residential district that would result in damage to the property value of something in excess of 20 properties. Research indicates that over 90% of home buyers and renters are less interested in properties near cell towers and would pay less for a property in close vicinity to cellular antennas. Documentation of a price drop of up to 20% is found in multiple surveys and published articles as listed below. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development considers cell towers as hazards and nuisances. The California Association of Realtors Property Sellers Questionnaire, specifically cell towers listed on the disclosure form for sellers of real estate. The seller must note neighborhood noise, nuisance, or other problems from, and include cell towers and high voltage transmission lines on the long list of problems. Click here to see the California Association of Realtors Property Sellers Questionnaire. Once built, cell towers can go up an additional 20 feet without community consent. Research indicates that over 90% of home buyers and renters are less interested, and it keeps repeating. Also, the existence of a cell tower in such close proximity to residences also poses significant health risks to the people living in them, people who are citizens of the city of White Salmon. And then he provides some excerpts about why cell towers provide health risks. All of these comments will be forwarded to council members. This is a lease that would pay the city less than $11,000 per year. It would benefit a large corporate enterprise to the detriment of many of your citizens at a cost locally of much more than the rent the city would realize. It would have the city surrendering control of property that was granted to the city with the intent of providing future drinking water capacity. For all these reasons, we ask, why would you do this? For all these reasons, my clients and I strongly urge the City Council to reject this proposal. Sincerely, James L. Casino. Second one is from Kevin Flanagan. Shauna and I live on Strawberry Mountain and will be directly impacted by this cell tower. We join Jim and all our neighbors in strongly opposing this illegal land lease in our CCR. We urge you to deny this proposal. Kevin B. Flanagan, 411 Strawberry Mountain. This one's from Richard Etherly. My address is 439 Strawberry Mountain Place, and the water towers are within a couple hundred yards of my front door. I am against the addition of a cell tower to this area. I refer to Jim Casina's letter for the reasons I am against. I will support Jim's efforts if we need to proceed with court action. Sincerely, Richard Etherly. This one is from Wayne Lobel. I am totally opposed to cell towers and residential. I wish there was more public information about this. There are health concerns that need further research, and it is bad and short-sighted for our scenic town. We have been so impacted by 5G. I mean, who even knows how that is affecting us? Upon Spectrum installing, even the technicians warned us not to utilize this until totally necessary, for reals. Cell towers are not neighborhood appropriate. I'd love to be linked on this issue and probably other town issues. If there are Facebook pages that help educate folks about these real life and health impacts that our admins are deciding on, I'd love to be linked. This is scary stuff from health perspectives you are voting on. Please vote a resounding no on cell towers in residential areas. Wynn LaBelle, Spring Street, White Salmon. This is from William Newman and Barbara Heyman, mayor and members of the council. I, William Newman, and my partner, Barbara Heyman, are residents of White Salmon. We are homeowners on Strawberry Mountain residing at 405 Northwest Strawberry Mountain Lane, which is less than 300 feet from the site of the proposed cell tower under discussion in this meeting. We are opposed to any such construction. At the risk of repetition, for we expect other homeowners will also be submitting comment, we will briefly make the following points. Firstly, we are concerned about the process by which this business has been conducted. As property owners in close proximity to this site, where construction of said tower would significantly and negatively affect our enjoyment of our property, its value, and potentially our health, we and our neighbors were astounded, one, to receive no notification that such a project was being contemplated, two, to receive no notice of this meeting where a decision of such import would be discussed, three, to see a non-conforming land use project proceed so far without transparent and public communication, public comment, or review via a standard, just a moment. Bruce, Albert, we're asking participants to mute their video so it's less distracting. Thank you. Public comment or review via standard permitting and variance process. Secondly, and of greater importance, we are concerned about one, the negative visual impact of such a structure, its potential height, which would be out of scale with all surrounding residential structures, and potential additional unforeseen and inappropriate visual impacts. Example, aviation hazard lights. And although we have not seen project plans, it is highly likely that this tower would be visible along sections of the Columbia River Gorge, the obvious negative visual impact. The negative impact to property values from the proximity to a cell tower. Such impacts have been extensively documented, leading in some cases to awards for damages to owners of residences in proximity to communication towers. Of grave concern, the potential for negative health impacts from nonstop 24-hour full body RF and microwave radiation. These are magnified by the proximity of all local residents to the high power radiation emitting sources on the tower and are not simply concerns, but fears. And finally, considering the site's land use requirements and restrictions, one, this property is designated R1 residential. This project is not allowable under such zoning. It further violates the city's height restrictions. Deviations from permitted zoning and code should be done via a standard, transparent public process followed by all construction projects. Two, all properties on Strawberry Mountain must abide by land use condition, covenants, and restrictions, CC&Rs. These did not intend for and do not provide for construction of structures for private commercial use. Furthermore, variations, even if allowed, must follow a review process and be approved by abutters. The transfer to the city of this particular parcel on which the tower would be sited was for the express purpose of constructing a city water reservoir. This is a public utility use benefiting all the citizens of White Salmon. Granting of the property to the city was not intended to grant permission for private commercial use. This project would provide commercial benefits to a private national communications provider at little financial benefit to the city of White Salmon. The commercial benefit would not only far surpass any potential benefit that the city's citizens would perceive, it would create immediate and obvious negative impacts on local residents. For these reasons, we ask you to reject this proposal. Respectfully, William Newman and Barbara Heyman. And this is the last one, and it's from Jeff Dellis with an address in Hood River. Dear City of White Salmon, I'm writing you to express my deep concerns for the proposed ground lease. While not currently residing in White Salmon, my family and I are longtime Hood River residents with property on Strawberry Mountain, upon which we intend to build a house for ourselves in the near future. There are several main concerns I have with regards to this proposal. One, scale/nuances. Consulting the FCC's Universal Licensing System database, results for Oregon RSA number 2. Oregon RSA number 2 operates 15 cell towers in the general Mid-Columbia region. Of these 15 sites, the majority are located on isolated hilltops and ridges well away from residences, with tower heights ranging between 150 to 200 feet tall. Whether 50 or 200 feet tall, a cell tower located in the heart of a single-family residential district within the city would be a blight, not only to the immediate residences, but to the greater white salmon community and beyond. In addition, and depending on the tower height, a continuous blinking signal light may be required to warn air traffic of its presence. This, by necessity, would contradict lighting ordinances typically established in residential zones and most commercial slash industrial zones to not generate illumination discharge onto adjacent properties. In fact, the intent of such a signal is to warn aircraft from miles away. My sense is that most communities have avoided allowing cell towers within their residential neighborhoods for these reasons, among others. Two, health risks. While I am no scientist specializing in that field, I am a father of two young boys and am too concerned for the health of my family to take a chance. The cellular industry is a vast multi-billion dollar industry filled with large conglomerate corporations and investment. One could only presume that we have yet to fully understand the long-term health effects of radiation from this equipment, as the cellular industry as a whole is likely not interested in discovering any health hazards. There is a body of research saying there are significant health hazards, a body saying there is not, and federal agencies, industry expert groups saying enough proof doesn't exist to verify any health risk. If there truly is no health risk, it is still a blight on the city landscape. If there are health risks, then in no way, shape, or form should they be located near people, particularly their homes. With no definitive yes or no across all researchers, and considering the financial and political power of such an industry group, I simply cannot trust that this would not pose a health hazard to our community, and especially those living right next to it. Furthermore, the terms of the proposed ground lease imply a level of permanence where once established, it is hard to imagine it being revoked without a legal battle that would pit the residents of White Salmon against a gigantic, well-funded, politically corrected industry. The situation is simply too risky to allow. Process. I am not familiar with the legality surrounding cell towers and their ability to supersede municipal process. But Section 17.78.025, Wireless Telecommunication Towers and Facilities, Development of Towers of the White Salmon Municipal Code clearly states in E that decisions regarding unclassified use permits require a public hearing conducted before the Planning Commission. And only upon appeal of a decision are they reviewed by City Council. I searched the City's Planning Commission past agendas back to 8/28/19 and found no mention of this proposal. Regardless of the Municipal Code's address of telecommunication towers, one should consider what the underlying zone would otherwise allow. The subject parcel is Zone R1, Single Family Residential District, White Salmon Municipal Code 17.24. Outright permitted uses are basically a single family dwelling. Allowed accessory uses are essentially those incidental to normal residential properties, accessory dwellings, and non-flashing signs of limited size. Residential conditional uses, White Salmon Municipal Code 17.40.020, generally allow for public uses of a variety of forms. Other variations of residential development, home businesses at a larger scale than allowed as an accessory use, and other conditional uses as authorized by City Council that are customarily incidental to permitted and conditional uses allowed in residential districts. Nothing in these ordinance chapters appear to come close to operation of a commercial cell tower by a private entity. Despite the municipal code discussing telecommunication facilities, it is clear that the intent of residential zones in the city do not contemplate the addition of cell towers as appropriate. In any other case, approval for such a use would only be obtained through a variance request, which involves prior notice to neighbors with a comment period and a public hearing in front of the Planning Commission. cost benefit. The ground lease would give the city a mere $900 per month, yet I would have serious, likely permanent, deleterious effects to the city landscape, would cause devaluation of a number of properties, would be a scar on the city seen throughout the gorge, and carries with it the potential to pose health risks to citizens. Also, some giant industrial machine can continue to make its money from afar. This does not seem worth it. I strongly urge the City Council to reject this proposal. Sincerely, Jeff Della. And that's all the public comment.
Can I make a point, Mayor?
Yes.
As the last commenter correctly points out, the City Council may be the appellate body for any land use appeal in this matter. So I expect that all these comments would be part of an official record later on. But in the meanwhile, if this does move forward, which that's certainly up to the council to at some point decide, I would suggest that there's a chance you'd have to go through appearance of fairness disclosures. If you have any communication with people outside the council about this project. So I'd highly recommend that you don't talk to anybody unless you need to, and if you do, you'd have to disclose that as part of an appeal. The City Council has another option, and if this does proceed, again, you'd have the option to allow this to be heard, if there's an appeal, by a hearings examiner instead of the City Council. And this is the kind of case where you may want to make that decision later on. That would free you potentially to have communications with parties related to this, what may be an application. It's very, very premature at this point. But I just have to warn you, because of your position as potentially the appellate body, that there's a chance you might want to decline talking to citizens about this project, and in lieu of that, there is the hearing examiner possibility, and you may want to opt for that later on. So just as some words of caution.
Thank you, Ken. And I think on that note, if it is appropriate, since we don't respond to public comment, but we can clarify further any facts that are mentioned. And I think there was a lot of discussion about the municipal code. Did you just mention to council their role in a potential future date of an issue like this? Could you also just clarify the process itself and where this item on the proposed agenda for tonight actually falls?
Right, and I'm not sure.
I just meant a more general explanation of the fact when a public hearing, which is a part of this process, would factor into the consideration, because obviously it seems like that was mentioned multiple times by the comments tonight, and council might not be familiar with that code.
Right, this is very, very premature. I represent three other cities, and I see these cell tower lease options come before cities quite often. The process typically is, unless the city council doesn't want to move forward, if the lease option would be approved, it's not a lease initially. It's an option to lease. It gives the prospective lessee an opportunity to secure entitlements, meaning they would have to go through the city's land use process, including before the Planning Commission, any of the requirements that the code imposes on this kind of land use still would have to happen. And normally a cell provider, if they don't get all their entitlements, meaning they don't get approved what would enable them to put a tower in that meets their needs, they'll decline to exercise the option, so there would be no lease in the future. All this does at this point is gives the cell tower provider an opportunity to explore whether this is beneficial, but it doesn't necessarily mean this will happen. But if the council at some point, and I think that there's a chance this may not even be potentially on the agenda tonight, if the council decides not to move forward with it, then that's the end of the subject, because there's nothing that imposes the city is not required to accept a proposal to move forward on a land lease or an option to land lease. But if it does, again, it's an option. It's not a lease itself. If they meet the whatever requirements they require for the property, then again, they have to go through the entire process. And then if everything works out in their favor, then they would be able to exercise the right to lease the property. But so it's very premature. If it comes to it, I will certainly have a lot of responses to Jim's points and some of the other respondents, but I don't know. This is not the appropriate time or place. It's just public comment. So that's my two cents.
Just one thing, that through that process, council, there would be a public hearing requirement. Usually these comments would come in at the public hearing process, not this early on.
So I request that we keep this on the agenda so that we can have a council discussion about it.
As we're jumping ahead to changes to the agenda, there's some other reasons why this item staff would like to have it pulled from tonight's agenda.
I have concerns with council discussing something at this stage, if council is still potentially in the loop to be the appellate body. It would be very potentially prejudicial to the applicant if there is ever going to be an applicant. But it's just not a time that, you know, discussing this sort of generally is appropriate. Now, if the council made the decision that this would be before a hearing examiner at some point and taking themselves out of the potential of being the appellant body, then that's one thing. But even so, that I think is very premature. We need to be careful about what the record would be if later there's an appeal.
So, Madam Mayor,
Jim,
I'm also concerned, as you know, we're under changes to the agenda. There are two items. One of them is to strike this item from the agenda. I'm also concerned that if we don't strike it, because there have been discussions, I believe, with Mr. Cassina, I'm not for sure that he is actually attending this meeting, because it is his understanding that we were requesting the agenda item to be struck and that it would be brought back again at another time. So I think there are a number of parties who are under the assumption that the City Council is not going to discuss this agenda item tonight. And I think it would be, Ken's your attorney, but as your clerk treasurer, I would caution you because of those assumptions, I would caution leaving it on the agenda.
Joe, do you have a comment or statement?
You're muted.
Go ahead, Joe, I think you're muted.
Ken, this is a question just to clarify the negation of the appellate body. Is that in lieu of like a land use petition with the Superior Court, or how does that work?
No, the Land Use Petition Act would apply to any final decision. So whether you are the appellate body or a hearings examiner would be appellate body, they'd always have the option to appeal it to the Superior Court if they do it within 21 days of the final decision. So that's always a possibility under the Land Use Petition Act, whether it's you or a hearing examiner.
Okay, and so that the council has the option to pass that on to a hearing examiner and pull itself from that process.
Yeah, that's right. Your code provides for that.
Thank you.
And Ashley, just to go back to your comment, because obviously I think this is an item that clearly people want to discuss, but I think that an appropriate conversation to be had would be within the City Ops Committee evaluating this ordinance, since this is the first time I think that we are seeing a application come through in the current council, and some evaluation by those council members in that committee if the process that we currently have, which I think can outline what was on the agenda tonight, was a very preliminary part of the current process we have, and whether that is how we would like these items to continue. I think that would be a good committee item to then bring back forward to the council on a policy level. Yes, Ashley.
I'm just curious to know how the rest of the city councilors feel about even moving forward. Like if there's interest in further exploring this issue, and when it would be appropriate to discuss that.
Well, I think the first thing, since we're on changes to the agenda, would be to bring the motion forward based on staff recommendations if the councilors so choose to remove this item from tonight's agenda. As Jan mentioned, that is the impression that some residents who have expressed comments already have. But furthermore, there are other reasons that staff would like the item to be removed. It is a bit premature to come before council at this time. But I think if that motion can be made, then we could have discussion as part of that action item.
I guess, in fairness to both the property owners, the neighbors in the area, and to this potential applicant, they ought to probably be aware the council is going to discuss it, so that if they want to participate or hear the council discussion, they would know to be here. So I think I may be kind of repeating what the mayor says, but that's, I guess, I would agree with that.
So, yes, Jim.
I think this is me just curiosity of the process, which is, it seems pretty clear that there, maybe it's not clear. How did this get on the agenda in the first place? If it's kind of immediately we're not wanting to talk about it.
I'll take that. So I had it placed on the meeting, and I was the one that pulled it because there's a technical language issue in the contract that needs to be resolved before it can come back.
And furthermore, I think, as I'm alluding to, I think that there is an opportunity for the current council to review this ordinance as written and determine if this is the type of process and the way that we want this procedure to unfold. Currently, it is being followed by the standing code that we have. I think it would be timely and appropriate for the City Ops Committee to look at this in more detail. I'm guessing that it hasn't been looked at in detail in a while, and evaluate if this is the way that we want the process to unfold, or if it's unnecessarily causing confusion.
And I would agree with the mayor. This is probably, you have an opportunity to take a look at your code to see whether there are issues or not. You have that opportunity in particular because it's a request to lease city property. So you have a lot of leeway here you wouldn't normally have if it was with a private party.
Joe, do you have a comment?
Yeah, I'll make the motion to pull the ground lease and easement with Oregon RSA okay. number 2 for a cell tower from tonight's agenda.
I'll second.
There's a motion made and seconded. Any more discussion? Okay, Jan, will you take a roll call vote?
Jason Harmon?
Aye.
Ashley Post?
Aye.
Jim Rensier?
Aye.
Joe Turkowitz?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Any other changes to the agenda?
Yes, we have one additional change. We would like to add resolution 2020-08-504, adopting the Klickitat County Multi-Hazard Mitigation Plan. It would be discussed after the committee appointments.
Okay, can we have a motion to?
Yeah.
Okay, Jason made the motion. Is there a second?
A second.
Joe made the second. Any discussion? Okay, Jan, can you take a roll call vote?
Jason Hartman?
Aye.
Ashley Post?
Aye.
Jim Rensier?
Aye.
Joe Turkowitz?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, moving on to the next item, which is a presentation. We're welcoming Erin Quinn to tonight's meeting. She is our Clickitat County Public Health Director. I mentioned this at the last council meeting, but we wanted her to come to this meeting once that all the counselors have a chance to meet her. She actually had the, I don't know if it's the good or unfortunate privilege of taking this position in the middle of the public health crisis we're currently still in. But I would like her to give an update on how we are at the county level handling the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic and any other information she may want to provide. And then there's an opportunity for any of the counselors or staff to ask her questions as well.
So Erin, this is Jan Brending. I'm the clerk for the city council. You can unmute your video and join us on video.
If you'd like.
If you'd like.
I'm going to very kindly decline because I've been working from home today and I'm
not okay.
No problem.
I'm not ready for a video, but thank you. So thank you for having me. I'm happy to come join your meeting and have these conversations because I just feel like the more I can engage with you all, it just helps us get our message out a little bit better. There's information every day to get out. It changes every day. So it's been really frustrating for a lot of people to understand kind of who to listen to and when to listen to them. So it's good to have engagements within the county. So thank you for having me. I'm going to go ahead and start out just with the numbers because that's kind of what everybody gets excited about every time. So currently countywide, we're at 179 cases. We have 45 cases that are considered active right now. So they're in isolation. They aren't considered recovered. And we have 131 people who are considered recovered and then 3 people who have passed away, the last person being in April. So in that regards, we've done really well. I think just because I'm having this conversation in White Salmon, it's important to have the conversation about the fact that we do classify cases per zip code. We did that initially and we got a lot of pushback. The community really wanted us to list it by town. So now on our website, if you look at the website, it has it by town, not by zip code. So I think it's important to remember specifically in White Salmon, the 98672 zip code is actually fairly large and does extend well past the city limits. So just keep that in mind. I actually had to look it up on the internet and I was surprised at how much area it actually covered. Last week, we did have 39 cases in the White Salmon zip code, 98672. That is the biggest week we've had to date. I think we had 17 cases come in on Saturday, and that's the most we'd ever had in 1 week. So that was exciting for all of us. That was a good test of our surge capacity. I can assure you that my staff did an outstanding job of responding. They were absolutely all over it. With the numbers, case and contact tracing is really the big way that we can ensure there's not additional spread. So once you have someone that's identified as positive, my staff will call them, they'll talk to them about who they've been in contact with and subsequently get in touch with those people that the positive person's had contact with and asking them to quarantine so that they potentially are not sharing that, you know, out further in the community. As of today, and I tell everybody when I give you information, I'm giving you as of today, tomorrow, my world and my info could be very different. It's been that way every single day since I started back. As of today, I'm not seeing any additional community spread outside the numbers that we're seeing associated with agricultural work in the White Salmon zip code. So that's, we have our fingers crossed. We're very pleased about that. It does, you know, the incubation period's up to 14 days, so we're kind of keeping our fingers crossed over the next 7 to 10, and that's not a be-all, end-all. but just really watching the numbers. But as of right now, we haven't seen any spread past that one location. So the staff there have done a really good job about making sure people are doing and getting the help that they need to make sure that they're staying at home and staying safe and not exposing other people. Another thing that I think people kind of look a lot at is, when you start looking at the recovered cases, even though we bumped up our case counts pretty quickly, we anticipate that they will actually decrease as quickly. Once you look at when people were symptomatic, when they actually got to a test, and then the amount of time that they need to be on isolation based on when they were symptomatic, if they're symptomatic at all now, we'll actually see quite a few of those positives that we got last week resulted to us drop off this week. So we'll probably see, I would guess, at least 10, if not more, fall off our active case by the end of the week. So we'll kind of get back to where we were maybe before this outbreak. This isn't any different than any other community in Washington. We're seeing a disproportionate number of cases within agricultural work. So we've already worked with some other areas in the county and have had really good success. So we're hopeful we'll continue to have good success here as well. Phase three is a big thing people like to ask me about. We had applied on July 1st. The governor on July 2nd had ordered a statewide pause on any advancement for the current phase. We have had zero information about when we will be able to apply for phase three again, and we'll actually have to go through the entire process a second time, given that our application at this point will be well over a month. We'll probably be at least 2 months, but we've gotten no direction. There's not even whispers from any of the, you know, kind of our contacts at the higher levels that have indicated anything about phase three. So we absolutely understand that that's very frustrating for everyone. It's frustrating for us as well. And so just asking people and reminding them to just be patient with your community and definitely patient with public health. That's my plea for the week. The other thing, just as far as, you know, part of getting to phase three when that's an option is really, you know, there's a lot of politics around mask wearing, and we've just really been asking people to make that choice to wear a mask. Right now, what I've been working on that's been taking a lot of my time, and rightfully so, is working with the school districts to kind of see what we could do to get schools back in session in a safe manner when the time is right. And part of what that requirement will be is the numbers in our community. So really making sure that people are choosing to wear their masks so that we can get those kids back in school as soon as it's safely possible, I think is just really important for all of those students. I think that's pretty much my just kind of standard canned update. Is there any additional information that anyone had questions about?
You're muted, Marla. We can't hear you.
Now you should be able to hear me. Are there any questions from any of the counselors first? It looks like there are none. I had a few questions, more general. I know that the phases are on a stall, but I think it's good to remind people that our health department is still offering other services. Are you guys back to full operation on the other services that you provide for the community, or are some of those still abbreviated at this time?
I could honestly say I can answer that both ways. So our services are abbreviated in that we're doing them differently. We've transferred a lot of our family planning clients that we're now doing telehealth with rather than in person. So our offices aren't open till in person. But for a clinical side, I think they're having their immunization clinic is by appointment only. In the past, we've done walk-ins. So that's open to the public tomorrow. All the environmental health programs are still available to the public. It's just a matter of calling. There's more hassle. You have to call, you have to make an appointment. We ask you to wear a mask if you actually come in our building. So in a way it's abbreviated, but I pulled the numbers for the commissioners yesterday, and we're actually ahead in some of our services than we are in a normal year, which actually shocked me and the rest of my staff as well. So we're absolutely still out there offering services. We still have WIC services. The federal government's given a waiver to do them remotely over the phone, I think until the end of September for now, and I'm certain that we'll extend that too. So we have, you know, the breastfeeding peer counselor programs. Those people are still getting calls and text messages where they might have come into the office previously, but we're still serving as many clients as we normally do, actually.
And then just one question, you mentioned it, but obviously since last week was the largest week to this point for us locally, if cases do come out of any of the known positives at this time, will they be tracked or notified to the community that they were the result of contact with someone already positive? Or do you guys go into that detail for community spread notification to the public?
So that's a good point. Thank you for asking that, because that's a point that I forget to put out a lot. So I remind people that at this health department, we don't have access to an epidemiologist. So those are the folks that really dig into the data and really look at the numbers. And so we can give you pretty like raw data. So I can tell you have 179 cases. I know that's for real. As once you start getting into actually like tracing back to specific cases, that's done at the state level. I don't always have that information readily accessible to me. They usually get back to me. So some of that information is anecdotal. I've been very cautious and mostly will not relay information that I'm not 100% certain is accurate and validated. So in some instances, once that's validated, yes, that's something I would share. But if I don't have that information validated, I just don't feel like anyone needs any more disinformation from health entities in this climate.
Good point. And I guess last question I had was just, so for anyone in our community or county who is receiving a phone call or is being identified through contact tracing, they'll be hearing from someone from your department only. Our health department is handling all contact tracing.
They are. At this time, my sense is that sometime in the future, but not anytime soon, the state will likely take over the role of contact tracing. We're going to try to, you know, my staff are all just super exhausted. So actually, if you see anyone from public health on the street, please tell them thank you for the hard work they're doing. But we felt strongly that it was important to have someone that was local, that kind of understood the lay of the land, understood the climate and the people. And a lot of times, you know, it's a small community and a lot of the nurses know a lot of the people they're on the phone with. And I think that helps us be more effective in our job. So for as long as we can manage it, I think we're going to continue to keep that as a local resource.
Okay, thank you, Erin. And did staff have any questions? Are there any now questions from counselors? Okay, it doesn't look like it. So Erin, thank you very much for taking the time to meet with us today. If anybody has any questions, I know that you make yourself pretty available via email. Would that be the best way for them to connect with your department, or is there a better way?
No, I'm happy to take emails. I don't always sit still at my desk, so email is a good way to get a hold of me, even if you just email me and say, hey, call me. My email is Erin, E-R-I-N-N, Q, at clickattackcounty.org.
Great. Well, thank you. We appreciate you taking the time this evening.
Yes, thank you for listening.
Moving into our business items. Item one is the COVID-19 update. And I believe most of you have had time to read the memo in the packet, but broadly speaking, this discussion item tonight is really to discuss and pursue further how we want to spend the CARES funding that's currently been allocated to the city. Those funds have a timeline stamp on them of the end of October, and we've held on these funds for a while to sort of see how the situation would unfold locally and if some of this funding would best be served to respond to an immediate outbreak situation, or if we were hearing from our medical community or the health department that there were pressing needs to help with mitigation of hospital overflow or areas of that matter. As the summer has unfolded, and as Aaron mentioned, the phases have been delayed, the sense now is that that CARES funding could best be served to helping members of our community, both the businesses, but also residents. So you'll see that what I've brought forward, and again, all of this is up to the council for review and discussion, and I tried to make a suggestion of splitting up the available funding into four buckets, more or less, covering what seem at this point to be the priority areas. Two of those buckets are about that community relief, some of that to residents, and then some to assist some of our customer-facing businesses, because I think, as Aaron mentioned, not only resistance to mask wearing, but also the expectation put on many of those businesses to make sure their customers are complying with all of the requirements, I think adds an additional burden for those types of industries. So trying to address some support to them through some funding. And then the final two buckets to assist further in some city operations. We mentioned this at the last meeting, but obviously with City Hall remaining closed for the foreseeable future, we're trying to get some of our employees to have better capabilities to work from home and move some business items forward. And then finally, that last bucket would be for more general community support. And some of that you as the council have already seen come forward. Face mask purchases, some parklet construction downtown, and then just a placeholder of some additional funds in that bucket for anything that we might see benefiting the community or residents as a result of or during the ongoing pandemic. So again, these are really just starting points for you guys to have the discussion or to ask questions of how we ended up at these areas. I did reach out to many of our businesses in the downtown that are dealing with customers, especially in our hospitality industry. They did express that money to help with mitigating some of those extra protocols they're having to follow in terms of helping with signage to make customers aware of what they need to be doing, potentially adding hand sanitation stations to help with disinfectant protocols would be helpful. Just relaying that to the council as well. But I think probably first it's better to open this item with a discussion for you guys before moving into a motion, unless anyone feels strongly of just moving straight into a motion.
So Mayor and City Council members, earlier today, well, actually it might have been, I can't remember what day it was. I emailed you a resolution that provides the action that you would take. So if you look at that resolution, there's a bunch of whereas clauses, and then it takes these four areas and describes them and then provides authorities to the mayor to implement those four areas. And so this is what most communities have done to identify the programs and provide the authorities. It's something that our auditors will want to see, that we have this type of resolution adopting these programs and authorizing the expenditures. Because it's such a narrow time frame, the reason we put in authorizing the mayor to move ahead, establish application processes, and get this money out, probably for the community support. A big chunk of that money has already been spent on face masks and parklets. There's probably a little bit left in there, but not a significant amount. So just wanted to bring that to your attention. It's resolution 2020-08-505. It would be the action item.
Yes, Jason.
I only have one question, and that is, what happens if you don't get the applicants to use that money? It then has to go back? Because we would need a minimum of 80 applicants for the community relief, and we would need whatever that amounts to, a dozen or 15 I guess 15 applicants for the businesses. So we authorize it, but then if the applicants don't show up, then the money just goes back to the federal government or state or however that works.
It's also on a reimbursement request. So they don't front the money up to us ahead of time.
I see.
So as we expend the money, we'll be submitting vouchers for reimbursement. I haven't done that yet with the parklets or face mask. And then we had also purchased one laptop. The mayor's authorized us to purchase another laptop to get another employee up and working from home. And so we have two of those. Those would be under the city operations schedule.
Got it. Thank you.
And that was one reason behind the proposal for that community relief fund, is kind of broadening the eligibility window for people, or umbrella, I guess is probably a better word. But there, as I mentioned at the last meeting, there are some funds that have come through to the county that are specific for rent, mortgage, and utility payment assistance. And that program will be getting finalized, I imagine, in the coming months. But it's very targeted and specific to low or moderate income. So you'll see this proposal that I put forward is actually broadening that, kind of trying to expand the income ranges that we would be trying to support here in the city, and then also broadening what that allocation could be used for. So not just utility or rent or mortgage payments, but also childcare, or obviously with schools starting with distance learning, if some households are burdened having to cover additional costs to support the children's at home schooling, just trying to make that amount that we could give out to our residents a little more flexible in terms of what helps that household specifically.
Marla, I'm not very familiar with the White Freeman Community Relief Fund. And I was just curious, do you know how the money is awarded? And I was curious if they work with the school district to determine, to find students that, like you were saying, might be in need.
So Ashley,
yeah.
This is our fund. We're creating it. Okay. It doesn't exist. Okay. So yes, we would have to work with the school district. I do know that our school district bought 450 Chromebooks in addition to the ones that they already had. I don't know if that's enough to cover everybody, but they were. They got some COVID CARES money directly, okay. And that was what they used that money for, knowing that they were very likely going to be starting the year out in distance learning. They were the first school district in Klickitat County to call distance learning. They made that decision early or late, depending. They were the first school district to realize that it probably wasn't going to happen with in-person schooling at the beginning of the year.
Okay.
And so I think it lays out some of the criteria here about how applicants are qualified. They have to have meet a certain adjusted median income. The hardship has to be shown that it's directly related to COVID-19. If they've been laid off, it has to be, you know, a layoff that's because of COVID-19, or any of their requests for this funding.
Okay. Can the hardship, isn't it enough that the hardship is that kids are unable to attend school in person, and if they don't have access to electronics?
That's directly related to COVID-19. Okay.
Yes, Jim.
One just minor clerical thing on the resolution where it says 30% Hispanic, Latino, Black, and Asian. I think the word family should be at the end of that. It's either people or families. I'm not sure which, but it being missing reads very unusual.
Thank you. Yeah, I think we had families in the draft.
Okay.
We'll add families in the first version.
I'm sorry.
Did I see your hand raised too, or? No, I guess, Jim, do you have another comment?
Yeah, sorry, one more. I know that we didn't put it there because probably the number changes, but what is the adjusted median income right now, roughly? Do we know?
What?
Yes.
Yeah.
I just was looking at it earlier today. Hold on, I'll flip back up.
What was the question, Marla?
What is the adjusted median income? Which I had the numbers earlier today from 2018, which I'm pulling right now. But Jan, if you had them.
I don't have it, unfortunately.
Okay.
Are we using White Salmon's or Klickitat County?
Well, you know, it's interesting. So we can discuss that and maybe we could clarify that part further, because when I pull it up, I believe that our incomes in White Salmon proper at one point were below and then might be above. But let me, I'm close to finding it. I know I'm a couple pages away from the document I have. While I keep looking, are there any other comments or questions? I don't see any, but I guess audibly say if my head is down and you would like to say something.
So Jim, I think it's, and Marla can correct me here in a minute, but I do think the AMI is in the 50,000 range.
Yeah, it definitely is in the 50s.
On the lower end of the 50s.
You see it's 47 and 418.
What, Joe?
I'm seeing $47,418 is the median.
What year is that, though? I think that's like 2010 or something.
Let's see. It's not giving me that.
Yeah, I think that's.
Here we go. So
2017.
So A. Okay. So 2018 AMI for Klickitat County is $54,056. For White Salmon, it's 55,677.
And that's for family?
Correct. So Joe is right. And the AMI that we used earlier this year when we were setting that affordability threshold was based on that 2017, which for White Salmon was the 47,418. So it's here.
And Jason, I believe that you are correct. This is a family of four. Is that correct, Marla?
Yes. Yeah. And these are based on the 2018 American Community Survey five-year estimates, which are through census.gov. So that's how they project in the interim of the every 10-year census. So yeah, so roughly 200% is going to get you into households just over 100,000.
Thank you.
And I will also add one other note, I guess, on maybe Jason's comment earlier just about the funds as they're outlined and if we don't use them and or reach people through these. In addition to the proposed grant here at the city level for businesses, the county, we anticipate more funds coming to the county level to do another round of grants to small businesses countywide. There's been two rounds of grant funding already from the county, and so we're expecting that that program would cover larger costs for businesses, and we thought perhaps targeting at a lower amount but a specific need that some of these businesses have would allow us to get do more with that requested amount of $22,500, but you guys could also, again, change these allotments if you wanted. And if we move forward with it tonight, then the next step would be actually for staff to build out the implementation plan. I think, Ashley, that would answer some of your questions about the community relief funds, whether we would partner with a local organization to oversee that application process, but the city would, you know, have the oversight of setting the requirements in that process and how thorough or detailed we would look for it to be. But the goal of this really is to make it easily accessible for either businesses or residents to access the funding and get it back into the community. And Jason, I think I cut you off. Sorry. Did you have a comment?
No, you're fine. I was going to make the motion if everybody's ready.
Just one final comment. I do want to make it clear, Marla, that those procedures wouldn't come back to the City Council, but we would certainly provide them to the City Council. This resolution authorizes you to move ahead and establish those procedures and application processes, because to get this money out, it would be very difficult to develop all of that and then bring it back to the City Council to authorize it and then start the application process. We want to get that going like yesterday. And so
yeah.
The resolution, I wanted to be clear to the City Council, this resolution does give the mayor some fairly broad authorization here. So you need to be comfortable with that. Knowing that I think she has the best interest of the city citizens and businesses.
Yeah, I think sort of on the heels of that, so you guys are clear, what I was trying to bring forward was really so you had a strong sense of the philosophical approach to how we want to use this funding and have that concept to sign off on. And then if you're comfortable with that, the staff would move forward. We would ensure that that high big picture goal that you have gets realized in whatever means we need to make sure that we can get the funds out there and meet these deadlines. And so that's the potential enlistment of a local organization to partner with us to distribute those funds, or if the city were to make the decision that they would take it on. But I do expect that we probably will want to enlist an organization locally to help us, just to make sure that we can, one, have broad outreach, but also fast turnaround and execution of the grant.
I'll go ahead and make the motion to adopt resolution 2020-08-505, authorizing expenditures of COVID-19 CARES Act funding and providing for procedures and certain authorizations.
Jason made the motion. Is there a second? Joe Turquitz made the second. I think you might be on mute, Joe.
Yeah, no, I second.
Okay. Any more discussion? Okay, Jan, can you do the roll call vote?
Jason Harmon?
Aye.
Ashley Post?
Aye.
Jim Rensier?
Aye.
Joe Turkowitz?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, we are moving on to action item 4 on the original agenda.
The
Ordinance
Mayor.
2020.
We had some people join in on the meeting after we had made a decision on changes to the agenda. So members of the audience who possibly joined in after our meeting started, the City Council made a motion, which was unanimously passed, to remove the ground lease and easement with Oregon RSA number 2 for cell towers from the agenda. That will be brought back potentially at a later date. So I just wanted to let some members of the audience know that is why we are bypassing that agenda item.
Thank you, Jan. So item 4 is next on the agenda, Ordinance 2020-08-1065, amending the 2020 budget, amendment number 2. Jan, would you like to give the overview?
So City Council members, you have an ordinance, you have the line item budget that shows the amendments. And and in the agenda memo, I provided a summary. It updates our fundings and expenditures, removes some funding for projects that are being delayed until 2021. Human resources and finance overhead cost allocations were also adjusted according to the budget. Salaries and benefits were amended to account for a full-time entry-level public works maintenance worker. When we originally budgeted the 2020 budget, that was a part-time seasonal worker, and you guys approved moving that position to a permanent full-time position. There were also minor changes in revenues and expenditures that I did not detail, but All the reasons for those changes were listed in the comments on the line item budget. Current expense, of course, we added the $78,300 in COVID-19 CARES funding. And we also added that as an expenditure item. We increased the funding for the park restroom remodel by $33,683 based on your approval of the contract at the last meeting. We also removed the funding for demolition of the pool, as that will be done in 2021. In the street fund, we took out the construction funding part of the Garfield Street because that's going to be constructed in 2021. We left the engineering in place. Street fuel tax funding was reduced based on information. Every year, Municipal Research Services publishes a budget suggestions publication. They usually update state shared revenue numbers for current year in addition to recommendations for the future year. So, and we were seeing that street fuel tax, it was running lower. We added some expenditures to the street fund related to the Jubert Water Main Project. That's the city shares related to stormwaters. We also added in funding in street, current expense, and water and sewer for purchase of cameras for the Spring Street Public Works Yard. Water fund revenues. I didn't adjust the revenues for water sales. Jason heard this mantra from me. Pat and Marla have heard it several times. When I budget low for revenues and a little bit higher on expenditures so that we are never caught with our pants down, to be blunt. It looks like even though we have some accounts that are behind in payments, it still appears that we are on track with our revenues. I think part of that is a lot more water is being used this year. Russ and Pat have had previously identified that. We had a warm spring, a very non-rainy spring. So people started watering earlier. We've had a lot of people working from home. I've heard that many more people are growing gardens this year because they are working at home. And so that usually sucks up a lot of water. So our water usage, I think, has accounted for some of us maintaining where we're at there. Late fees was reduced. At this time, we are not collecting late fees. We are not charging late fees per the mayor's emergency declaration. And so those fees have been reduced. Added an interfund transfer from the USDA Rural Development Fund, which is related to our Jewett Waterline. It covers 2019 improvements, administrative costs. We increased the funding in the water funds for consulting related to the aquifer storage recharge program. We have a contract with Aspect Consulting. And I think that's pretty much it. The water system plan under the water reserve fund expenditures was increased by $20,000, and that's per the task order that was approved by the council with Anderson Perry. One of the things that we have been tracking, I didn't speak specifically to it here, is our sales tax revenue. Right now, we're pretty close to being on track. Again, I budgeted for 2020 sales tax in anticipation of an economic decline and fewer new housing starts. So that was probably a good thing. COVID-19 came and, a lot of our restaurants were closed for a while. But I think their takeout has helped. It'll be interesting to see what happens this winter. However, the hospital has started their construction project, And that's a significant construction project, and they do collect sales tax on that. So we will see some sales tax associated with the hospital construction project. So hopefully that'll make up for any declines that come in during the winter time if we don't move into phase three. Staff and the Personnel and Finance Committee are recommending adoption of Ordinance 2020-08-1065, amending the 2020.
Can we have a motion?
I'll make that motion.
Okay, is there a second?
I'll second it.
Any discussion or questions? Jan, I had one question just to clarify. So the revenue under hotel motel taxes fund, is that taxes received through April, or what's the period that that has now been reported through?
Well, so we get revenue each month. So that would have been through the end of July. We get our money that comes in July. We get it at the end of July. But that is money that was paid by individuals in May. So okay. Our sales taxes, when we get sales taxes in July, they were actually paid by businesses in May to the Department of Revenue. So the Department of Revenue takes about 2 months before they transmit taxes to the different entities in the state. And you'll see a line item in the current expense budget that says sales tax or sales interest. Basically, we get a little bit of interest money because they sit around and hold that money for a while. Not a lot, but it's some.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, seeing none, Jan, will you take a roll call vote?
Jason Hartman?
Aye.
Ashley Post?
Aye.
Jim Rensier?
Aye.
Joe Turkowitz?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, moving on to business item number 5, the Jewett Main Water Improvements Project, change order number 3. Jan or Pat, would either of you like to give the overview?
Jan's more familiar with it than I am, so paperwork goes to her.
Okay, so this is change order number 3. It is in the amount of $18,006.25. It also changes two dates, the date of substantial completion from September 21st to September 24th, and changes the date ready for final payment from October 21st to October 24th. The reasons for the change order are pressure sewer repairs that are described on page 100 of your packet or page 1 of attachment A. There were some work that had to do with some sewer lines that were impacted by the construction project. If you've ever driven down the hill, approximately right in front of what I call the old Roberson and Gibbs building, there was always kind of a little bit of a sinkhole that's been, you know, WashDOT would come in and pave over it. It would redevelop. Well, there was actually a sewer line that was probably already in some level of failure there, but then the construction project collapsed it completely. Also, there was a fire line installed, and it covers those costs also. So staff recommends approval of change order number 3 in the amount of $18,006.25 with the accompanying change of dates.
I'll make that motion.
Okay, Ashley made the motion. Is there a second? Jason Hartman seconded. Any more discussion? Okay, Jan, can you take a roll call vote?
Jason Harmon?
Aye.
Ashley Post?
Aye.
Jim Rensier?
Aye.
Joe Turkowitz?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, moving on to item six, committee appointments. So this is coming onto the agenda for two reasons. First, primarily, since we have seated a new council member, Jim, making sure to have full council appointments with all five council members. And then secondly, and this is up for discussion with the council, but the thinking in extending these fully through 2021 was just the acknowledgement that so many months have been lost this year where we weren't able to have our standing committee meetings. Now those are starting to resume as we enter into the fall, but obviously it's been an abbreviated year. And so I felt that it might help for continuity and to keep things moving forward if we kept the councilors on each committee through 2021. But if the council feels strongly otherwise, the motion can be made to either include or remove that suggestion. But overall, there really are not any actual musical chairs in this proposal. It's simply seating Jim for now on the Community Development Committee, which was where Amy Martin was seated, and also noting that we still have two open public representative positions on tree board. So again, anyone on council, if you know of anyone who has an interest in that position, I would welcome you reaching out to me. I guess we might start with discussion first, just to make sure that the council makes the motion that they would like to make on this item.
So Marlo, the motion would be you make the appointments and it's up to the council to confirm those appointments.
And confirm them through 2021 if right. they choose.
If they choose.
I'll make the motion.
Okay, motion I'll make the motion. Made by Jim. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, seconded by Joe. Any further discussion? Okay, Jan, can you take a roll call vote?
Jason Harmon?
Aye.
Ashley Post?
Aye.
Jim Rensier?
Aye.
Joe Turkowitz?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, moving on to added agenda item number seven, the Klickitat County Hazard Mitigation Plan, more formally a resolution of the City Council of the City of White Salmon to adopt and declare support of the Klickitat County Multi-Hazard Mitigation Plan. Jan, would you like to give background on
And Bill can back me up on this one. He's sat in on a lot of these meetings. I participated in the meetings and some of the work on this mitigation plan when I was working for the City of Bingen. And then when I came up here, Bill was doing most of that work for the City of White Salmon. The county has spent a couple of years in developing a multi-hazard mitigation plan. It addresses a different number of hazards throughout the county, including wildfire. Once this plan is adopted and an emergency is declared in Klickitat County, then FEMA monies become available to all the three cities and the county, which we haven't really had access to necessarily in the past. And so those funds can be used for mitigation purposes to mitigate different multi-hazards. It's a planning tool, and it's something that we've needed for a long time so that we could have access to more funding. Bill?
Yeah, I've spent many hours and many meetings on with this. Mayor Poucher asked me to kind of run with this because I guess nobody else had time, but it got dumped on my plate, so did the best we could. There's also some possible monies for some pre-hazard mitigation if we recognize some spots of possible landslides and stuff which could affect our water line. That's one of the main things where we There's several projects that we added as projects through Jan and Pat and Kevin and that we put on the plan already to possibly do. So several million dollars may be available, we hope, to apply for. So guys, read the plan, you'll see them in there, I think.
I did put a link on the city's webpage that has the entire plan. As I noted, it's a large document and it will take, it won't take seconds to download. Let's just say that.
Yeah, no, it's a very large document covering the whole county with a lot of things. So, but I think it was very well done. Emergency management hired a planner to, or a person to help this. There was in the Highway 8 fires 5 years ago, I think it was, there was a little over $1 million that could have come to the county in hazard mitigation that we were not able to access because we didn't have this plan in place. So if we have a wildland fire or something like that happen here, there's as money's available that could be expended. So it's this is a very necessary item.
And timely, since the governor just declared a statewide wildland fire emergency today, I believe. So
yeah, some of that was so that they can use National Guard to fight fire if we need them. So that's the way I read that.
Can we have a motion? The motion would be to adopt the Klickitat County Multi-Hazard Mitigation Plan.
To adopt resolution 2020-08-504, adopting and declaring support of the Klickitat County Multi-Hazard Mitigation Plan.
Make that motion.
Okay, Jason Hartman made the motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Jim made the second. Any more discussion? Okay, seeing,
One Jason. Thing I thought was interesting is they Oh, sorry. The one thing I thought was interesting was they said that, or in the plan, it said future potential risks to look into, and one of them was a pandemic. So,
yeah.
I guess that's the downside to drafting it 3 years ago and now getting the final. Right. And in that interim, you have that emergency happen.
Right.
As long as some of the other emergencies don't happen that are listed in that plan, we'll be, you know.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah, like an 8-point something earthquake.
Earthquake, yeah. Yeah. It's in the plan, but we don't want them happening anywhere, including the pandemic. But
yeah. Okay, Jan, can you take a roll call vote?
Jason Hartman?
Aye.
Ashley Post?
Aye.
Jim Rensier?
Aye.
Joe Turkowitz?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, now moving on to the next item.
We're the first ones to adopt this plan.
You know, that's a good.
Seen anybody? Sorry.
That's a good question. I haven't seen anything, Bill. Jan, have you? It just came out August, right after our last council meeting. So we wanted to make sure we got it to you guys as soon as possible.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'm just asking if.
Yeah, Jeff.
What was the question?
He wanted to know if anyone else has this on their agenda.
The right? Signers, there's like 8 signers on this plan. City of Bingen, City of White Sand, City of Goldendale, Klickitat County itself, and a couple of the others, Underwood Conservation District. I didn't know if anybody else had adopted this yet. It only took, the way I read it, it only took one to get it going. So that's a good thing that we could be that one if it becomes that. So.
I talked to Jeff and he wants to get everybody to get this approved ASAP by everybody.
Right.
Okay, moving on to the next item, which is an executive session. We'll be meeting in an executive session pursuant to RCW 4230.110.1I to discuss potential litigation. We do need to set a time period for that before the counselors and staff go into the other virtual meeting access area.
So my recommendation, we have a separate Zoom meeting scheduled for this. My recommendation to Ken and Pat is we have up to 40 minutes. Let's not schedule too short of a time, because then I have to keep running back and forth between my different meetings.
Understood, although you cannot commence your other meeting before That's the correct. Expiration of the time that you announce. So
That's correct.
Don't make it too long.
Right.
Pat, I don't see this as taking very long.
No, I'm just trying to figure out where Jan sent me the email for the other meeting.
Well, it has the email that you clicked on.
Oh, I see it. Meeting.
It has it in the same email.
Okay. Thank you. Now, it should, 5 minutes enough? Everybody think?
I would propose 10 at the minimum, or I would say 15. We have a new counselor. And then I would add 2 minutes to whatever time the council decides on to account for everyone switching over and dialing in, just so that doesn't eat into the amount that you actually want for talking. So I would, throwing numbers out there, I would recommend 15.
So for members of the audience.
Sorry, Jason. Go ahead, Jan.
Members of the audience, what will happen is the city council members will leave this meeting. This meeting will keep running. It'll keep recording just blank noise. And so here shortly, we'll declare what time they'll be leaving the meeting and going into executive session for 15 minutes to discuss potential litigation pursuant to
42-31-10-1i.
Yes. So at 7:31, we are going into executive session.
Was there agreement on 15 minutes as the time? Or would you like 17 minutes so that there's a minute or two for switching over?
I'm thinking 13 minutes and we'll take 2 minutes to switch over.
Okay. So at 7:32, let's go.
There you go.
Oh, man.
Looks like you and me, Russ.
Pretty much, huh?
You're gonna hang out, not it's up, you know.
I don't know.
How's everything going?
Good, you?
It's all right. Of course, everything we said is going to be recorded here, so we have to be careful.
Yeah.
didn't want to get into too much detail of anything here, but that might be recorded in council minutes.
Right. Now things are pretty busy, so.
Yeah, I'm sure with the water line.
Yeah. Water line, we got slugs in going on too, so.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I haven't been involved with that yet, so.
Yeah, along with other things.
Yeah, that's good. That haven't stopped completely, that's for sure.
Now, right. Got a lot of new services that are scheduled to go in. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah, good. Will keep me busy too.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So I think I asked you, did you find out when they were going to plan on putting the Storch fittings on the hydrants downtown on the new line or? I've had several firefighters ask me.
Right. I'll have to look and see what's on this.
Can't hear you, Jan. I think she chastised us.
This meeting is recording still, so you should not be discussing anything. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
So we've got two more minutes.
What did I say about going too long? You have to just sit around and wait.
2 minutes is better than.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. That's not bad.
One more minute. Okay, Marla, you can begin.
Thanks, Jen. I'm assuming everyone hears me, but no decisions were made in the executive session and staff will proceed as discussed. Moving on to the consent agenda, I'm making an edit to the agenda as written, as we usually do that before department head and council member reports. This includes the approval of meeting minutes from August 5th, 2020, second quarter 2020 budget report, July 2020 budget report, and vouchers in the amount of, which I don't have it readily in front of me. Jan, do you have the amount?
Yes, because all the craziness is this afternoon, I didn't get it sent out to everybody. It's $509,263.50. David Lindley not being here threw me off of my routine.
We'll blame him.
That was 63 cents on the end?
No, $509,263.50. Mm-hmm.
60 cents.
50.
I'll make that motion to approve.
50. Okay, thank you. Jason made a motion to approve. Is there a second?
You're muted, Ashley.
I'll second.
Ashley made a second. Any discussion? Jan, can you take a roll call vote?
Jason Hartman.
Aye.
Ashley Post.
Aye.
Jim Rensier.
Aye.
Joe Turkowitz. Do we not have Joe? Where is Joe?
Right here.
Okay. I'm trying to find you in the faces. Motion carries.
Okay, moving on to department head and council member reports. Chief Heppner, it looks like we have lost in his car, so we'll go to Chief Hunsaker.
Last Wednesday night, there was a mutual aid request for structural task force to go over to the Mosier Creek fire. So we had an engine and a tender respond over there for all night Wednesday night to help out on the Mosier Creek fire. There was a lot of tenders, a lot of equipment over there, which good help. I responded to the tender, operating the tender, and had an engine besides. And so that part of the reason I do that is in case they need, we need help, they will come to us too. So.
Good. Any questions for Bill? Sorry, cut him off.
All right.
Okay, Russ, any updates? Go ahead, Ashley.
Bill, have you heard any updates on that fire?
Probably not any more than you've heard on the news. There was several structures burned. I know one family lost pretty much everything over there, one extended family from grandparents down, I saw in the news, 950 acres. I think it's pretty well contained now.
Russ, any updates for the council?
Crestline's moving along. They're installing services and hydrants below 7th Street all the way down to Skyline pretty much to finish that up this week. They'll pressure test that section and then final tie-overs on those services. I imagine next week sometime that probably end up starting up, going up Skyline. So that's
great.
What I know so far for the water main project. We did get a lot of the crosswalks painted this week. I think that's about it.
How about potholes, Russ?
Oh, yeah, we'll still be working on potholes next week also after getting caught up with the crosswalks.
Pat, any updates?
Well, you guys want to hear about my Alaska fishing trip, I'll be more than that for the next hour.
But, it's almost 8 o'clock.
Moving along, Pat.
So, no, just trying to catch up from being gone. Pretty much everything's going along, just some land use activity, a lot of questions coming in about, which I'm really surprised how much land use activity is going on right now, and a lot of questions about new building, zoning questions going on, probably getting 4 to 5 of those a day from different people for the last week, so that's kind of surprising to me, but that's good news. Other than that, just talked to Pioneer Surveying this week about how the roundabout Garfield tie-in project is doing that all in one project is moving forward. I just want to make sure we keep pressure on him because sometimes it can be difficult getting things through DOT for them to respond and get back, and we want this to be able to move very quickly next spring. So I just want to make sure DOT is on board with whatever his design is, so this can move very quickly in the spring to get that project done. Other than that, starting on looking at some budget activities, given that we're spending all of our water money, I guess next year we'll be looking at some sewer projects. Mainly the manholes on Jewett, they're brick manholes. They are probably 100 years old, some of those. They need reline to protect the integrity of them. They're starting to they're starting to break down, so we need to go in there and repair those. The design work and engineering work project going on for Brook Creek water line coming in is still moving forward, and I believe they're on schedule, and they're doing a lot of work out there.
Great. Jan, any updates?
A couple of things. We'll be scheduling the Personnel and Finance Committee has a tentative calendar for the 2021 budget schedule and updating the 2020 budget through the rest of the year. We'll all be in contact with the Community Development Committee, the Tree Board, and the Operations Committee to schedule an upcoming committee meetings to address specific topics. As you saw in the memo from the mayor, we'll select a regular meeting date, but unless we've got something we're specifically timely working on, we won't meet on a regular basis. At the last meeting, the mayor had discussed about holding a retreat, review our priorities that were set last year, and to identify any budget priorities for the 2021 budget. I don't have David here, but I would like to see if what everybody's schedule is for September 9th, if that would be possible to schedule at 6 p.m. that evening, a 2-hour kind of very, very succinct retreat meeting. What we'll do is we'll send out ahead of time the kind of the priorities you had identified in at the retreat last year,
And then we'll probably have a memo about any carryover projects from 2020 to 2021. And we will have quite a few of those. And then if there are any significant new projects that'll be coming in 2021, we'll also put those in. Because of course, all those carryover projects do have an impact on staff's capacity to address new projects. But we certainly, you know, the goal is to hear from the council and make sure that we are pursuing the priorities that, that are your priorities. And so ideally it'd be great if we could agree to that, tentatively agree to that September 8th meeting at tonight, so that we could get working on scheduling that date and getting the products ready to together to deliver to you.
You said
the 8th for the 9th.
Wednesday, September 9th is what you
September
said,
9th.
Right, Jan?
Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
That's what I thought. That works for me.
Yeah.
It's good for me.
Works for me as well.
Yep. Me too.
Okay. And the 6 p.m. start time? To match normal council meetings or okay.
I think David's out of cell phone range, so check with him too.
Yeah, I was just thinking we'll check with David, but sounds like that could work well, hopefully.
And that's all I have right now.
Anything else?
Okay. Oh, just as just as a real quick FYI, one of the things that we're going to do this week as an outreach with our businesses is I'm going to be contacting our businesses and giving them a whole bunch of our face masks so that they can provide them to their customers as they come in. Even today at Harvest Market, I was in there and there was a young man who was, you know, kind of just holding up a t-shirt. And, you know, unfortunately, it's the staff that has to deal with those people to try to get them to understand that that doesn't work. And so having those face masks, I think, at the door are really helpful in case people forget their face masks. I'm smiling at someone.
That's me.
Or visitors who wish to remain oblivious about face mask requirements and will claim that they didn't know, then that way the face masks are there and hopefully it will dissipate some of the arguments that have happened. I took some today to the laundromat and they asked me for some COVID-19 posters. And so when I was over there, I had a bunch of face masks in from the farmer's market and I just gave them all there. And she was thrilled. I mean, just thrilled because they have had some issues there with people not wearing face masks while they're in the actual laundromat. And Marla, I'll be.
We've heard from some of our businesses downtown too. The restaurants have expressed that it would be helpful as well. So
yeah, I talked to North Shore at the farmers market yesterday, and they were all excited about it too. So we'll be getting those out this week.
Great. Ken, any updates? Oh, sorry, Jim, do you have a question?
Yeah, I don't even know who to direct this to. It's probably somebody's update already, but who owns the parklets? Like, who's the person to ask questions about the parklets?
The city built the parklets and provided the space to the businesses. So they're assigned to a particular business. But if you have a question, Jim, I could answer it for you.
Yeah, sorry. That was the very literal interpretation of my question. I actually just meant, who do I ask the question to? So my question is obviously the parklets are there for this year. Do we have any sense from the state yet about being able to do it again next year? Has that conversation happened yet?
No, the parklets right now are related to COVID-19. And so that discussion has not taken place. It is, if it wasn't state highway, we would have 100% control of it. But because it's state highway, if we wanted to do it and there's no COVID-19 involved, we would have to get state highway permission. I can't really speak to that. I think they might be open to it. We would just have to check with that. I do know that we have businesses currently that do have concerns about parking, but they understand the need for the parklets related to COVID-19. So I think it would be a whole new discussion if we're not in a state of emergency related to the pandemic next year.
Got it. Thank you.
We will be taking them out, Jim, probably at the end of October or when it really starts raining.
Yeah, we originally had said Labor Day, but with everything that's happened, especially the delay in phases, our approach now is to really just monitor that weather. And as long as it feels appropriate to still have outdoor seating and the weather's mild enough, that we would try to keep the season extended as long as possible.
Great.
And I will say that WDOT has been interested in hearing from communities and seeing examples of the parklets. And they actually, after we had everything done, were pushing out a small amount of funding across the state to try to encourage similar enhancements in other communities. So I wouldn't be surprised if, like Jan said, that there would still be a process, but that they might be more open to these types of street uses going forward, even outside of a pandemic, but there's, you know, that would remain to be seen, but it seems like there's some positive activity on that front.
Perfect. Love it. That's great.
We were the first city to request them.
Yeah. Ken, did you have anything to update the council on?
Not updates, but did I miss it, or was there a motion to excuse David?
Yes.
There was?
Yes.
Okay, good. Never mind. Yeah, no, I don't have any updates.
Okay. Councilor reports. Joe, any updates?
Nothing for me.
Jason?
Nothing for me.
Ashley?
I have one, and then I have a few questions.
So
I just wanted to share with the council, I'm going to be meeting with the mayor and police chief. I'm not sure if it's a phone call or Zoom, but on Monday to discuss the possibility of proposing some changes to Vine Street, Grandview, and maybe Oak Street. Changes to slow traffic as those streets are being used as an alternative route. So I'll share the follow-up to that conversation at our next meeting. I was wondering if there was any reaction from the bike park decision last week, if there's any news from that.
Yes, that's one thing I can update you on that I forgot all about. So we got feedback from our insurance agency. We amended the contract, removing the indemnification clauses, added the language about requiring waivers for volunteers. I forwarded that to Scott along with the volunteer form and also the notice that he had to have COVID-19 plans in place. He emailed me back today saying he was going to sign that agreement as presented, and he would be getting the volunteer forms and the COVID-19 plans to me. He has to have those in place before he can start working, but he is ready to move forward. And so we'll get the contract, and Marla will sign it, and away, and once we get the volunteer waivers, then he can go to work.
Okay, that's wonderful. And then I was also just wondering, Marla, I was reading in the minutes, you just mentioned that you would share if there was any updates about the possibility of reopening public bathrooms. Has there been any conversations with Mount Adams Chamber of Commerce or any other Gorge leadership since our last meeting? Oh, you're muted.
Sorry, Too many mute buttons. I'm connecting with Tamara tomorrow, actually. I was hoping to connect with her today before the meeting, but that didn't happen. So I'll follow up. I'll send an email to Jan that she can send to everyone with where that stands. But we are still looking at how to get service to those bathrooms at Heritage Plaza as appropriate and matching what we can support.
Okay. Thank you. That's everything.
Jim, any questions or updates?
No questions or updates at the moment, but there's a list and I'm building it.
Great. Okay, Jim, updates.
Just as a quick comment, if you have questions, particularly for staff during the week, don't hesitate to reach out and contact us. That's what we're here for, is to answer questions. And I know that you're new and you probably have a lot of questions about a lot of things. Just, you know, contact Pat or contact me or Bill for fire and building or Mike for police, and we'll get you answers.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, I've slowly been working on the list of questions.
Okay.
And then hopefully you can point me in the right direction.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
And Jim, have you gotten the information about scheduling the new elected official OPMA and BRA training?
I sent him the link.
Okay.
Yeah,
you're supposed to do that. Oh, okay, good. Because that's once you've done that, you can. If you've done the self-certification, then you're done.
I've watched the videos, but if there's a certification, I didn't click on that link wherever that's at, and I'll find it.
And the Attorney General's webpage has a thing that you can self-fill out a certification, so you can do that.
Perfect. I'll do that. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. A couple updates on my end. First, regarding the bridge. The EIS working group, which was formed now almost 2 years ago, I believe, we will be having a meeting in the upcoming month to review the supplemental draft environmental impact statement, which will actually be published, and anticipate that going to the public later this year. It looks like once that's published, there will be an open public comment period to get feedback from the community and input. And this is all part of this initial step that Oregon received funding for, and why the port is overseeing it in terms of the environmental impact review. They do think that's going to probably go to the public around the holidays, so they are looking at extending that time frame. But once we have that meeting next month, I'll bring updates back to you guys. But the long and short of it is that despite everything with COVID-19, that process that was tracked as a multi-year undertaking is actually staying on schedule. So that's the good news on that front. Regarding our comprehensive plan, which has a 2020 date, staff and myself did receive and review the draft element update. So we are giving feedback to, now I always want to say for Graveman, but WSP, correct?
Yes.
I believe so. Yes.
Yes.
And to follow up so that we can better map out what the upcoming meetings will look like for the Planning Commission, but still anticipate that deadline is going to extend somewhat since they did miss so many months of meetings. And then one thing that I was remiss in mentioning is the last meeting, but hopefully we'll remember in every meeting between now and the end of September, is the importance of the census. Hopefully you all have filled it out, but as much as you can to encourage your neighbors, your friends, if you are still having other Zoom meetings for community organizations or through your employment as you feel appropriate, really encourage people to fill that census out. The return rate so far has not been that stellar, especially locally. And so we really are trying to get as many responses as possible. This, along with the fact that the government has moved up the national timeline for census collection gathering. And so we only have until the end of September to get responses in for our community. So it really is important. You might have seen we've had a banner up at City Hall for probably the last couple of months, but as much as you can push people to go to census.gov and fill that out, it is really important.
Marla.
Another note, yeah.
On that census taking, there are census takers in our community. When I was at the market yesterday, I had someone tell me that somebody came to their house. They stood outside and they answered the survey questions. And she said they were very nice. It was somebody that she knew. They try to hire local people. So they are out there already following up in our community based on that, you know, probably maybe even a little earlier than some other communities since our rate return is so low. Their goal is to get to everybody, but they may not by the end of September 30th.
Marla, yes, Ashley. Speaking of that, I thought it was really strange. I filled out the census online a while ago, and then I did have someone come to my house, and I was on the list. I was listed as someone who hadn't filled it out yet, so I did it again. But I thought that was strange and a little worrisome. If they're doing it online and it's not registering.
Yeah, that is interesting. I haven't heard any stories along that line, but we do have a census contact. Out of curiosity, I might just ask her if that's becoming more common or not, because it would be nice to know. And then I guess just two other things, since Ashley mentioned it, she is right. I did reach out to her and as well Chief Hebner more broadly about speed limits throughout the community. If you look at our city code now, we have a lot of piecemeal adjustments that have been made over the years for just certain streets. I think it would be beneficial to have a comprehensive approach to speed in town. And she is right that during the course of this project, we have heard from a lot of residents on those side streets that have been impacted by the detours and the desire to explore reduced speed limits. So my hope in enlisting a counselor and the police chief to discuss this further is to get a sense of if there is a consensus on an approach we would like to take, but then the process again would be to come before council with whatever would be proposed or brought forward by Ashley, or if the decision's made to take it to a committee. So that's just in the very early stages. And I know it's been a while since I've updated on any efforts in terms of broadening our engagement with the community to get input on public safety and kind of how inclusive our government and our law enforcement has been for the entire community. So just briefly on that front, I know that Councillor Lindley has been working on this as well, and we've been working with Chief Hebner, but I do expect that in the next month, especially now that the committees will be meeting again, we'll hope to enlist the Community Development Committee, but come back to the council with some reports on some good actions forward. In the meantime, there have been quite a few workshops and series that I've been participating in, both through AWC, the Obama Foundation, and some through the National League of Cities. So a lot of informative information, some of it more applicable to larger entities, but I think all of it has been, there have been pieces that we can take apart even for smaller communities to really figure out approaches across the board in a variety of areas on ways to make sure that we are being inclusive and giving fair opportunities to everyone and making sure that everyone in the community is feeling supported and protected in all areas, whether it's needs from government officials, from law enforcement, from housing, which I know we've talked about many times. But if any of you have questions specifically, feel free to reach out to me. But otherwise, I do think that'll be coming back to the council certainly in the fall. And I think that's it on my list, and it is 8:15. So unless there are any other questions or comments anyone wanted to raise, seeing no hands, I think we can move to adjourn this meeting at 8:15. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.